Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're live at Chiefs training camp in St. Joe, Missouri. It's brought to you by Missouri Lottery, Mosaic Life Care, Metro PCS, Kansas Sampler, and Rally House. Jed Marshall is running the show from our Rally House studios. Rudy Salazar is up here in St. Joe. My name is Brad Porter, also in St. Joe, where the rains are, has it stopped raining? It looks like it stopped raining. Yeah, we're under a protective tent. So it looks like it is stopped raining for the moment. The players never did leave the field today because there was no lightning in the area. So going through drills right now. Speaking of going through drills, this guy likes going through the drills about writing about the Kansas City Chiefs. Matt Verderam from Fansided. Matt, how are you on this Sunday morning?
I'm great. How are you?
I am doing absolutely fantastic. We had a little rain here at Chiefs training camp. That's okay. I mean, they're popping. They're in full pads today. They're popping the pads, getting a little wet. You know, it's time to get a little nasty out there.
And when I was in high school, if it rained during two-a-days, you were thrilled.
Loved it, yeah.
So, I think that's probably, if you're a player and you start seeing some rain, it's like, it's going to be a good day. It's going to be a little cooler today.
We played, when I was in grade school, we had a field that was just awful. The grass would hardly ever grow on it. And if it rained, we would be pushing and driving towards the biggest mud pile we could find. Hey, Chiefs training camp is underway. This is day four, but it's day two in full pads and kind of kicking around earlier. There's athletic skills and there are traits that can stand out early in camp, but you can't make an official judgment yet. So how much do we need to temper our the things that we see out here in St. Joe?
A lot. A whole lot. I love training camp's fun, exciting, football's back. You love going out and seeing, especially the younger players, you know, the rookies, or maybe if you're going, it's the first time you've gone to camp, it's fun to, as a fan, see a guy like Eric Berry, somebody like that. But the reality of it is, look, you can't get too wrapped up in if Patrick Mahomes throws a touchdown pass to Tyreek Hill, and you can't get too wrapped up if he throws a pick to David Amerson. The reality of it is these guys are very familiar with each other. They're all very familiar with the same playbook. Okay, and on top of that, they're going to try things in practice they would never try in a game as individual players. It's just like spring training in baseball. You know,
right.
You know, guys are working on pitches. They're working on mechanical things in their swing. The same thing in football. So I wouldn't get too overreactionary to one play or you know, a guy you've never heard of who's been in the league for 6 years having a good camp. Typically, doesn't mean a whole lot.
I'll tell you what, though, in terms of things standing out, right now we're watching 7-on-7 with the number one offense versus the number one defense. Daniel Sorensen has been lined up at inside linebacker all day, which is different. But one thing that stands out there, yes. In fact, when Rudy Salazar pointed out, he goes, "You realize he's been a linebacker all day, right?" I was like, oh boy. I hope that's not a trend that continues. But one of the things that stands out in terms of just individual traits, getting to see Sammy Watkins live in person. TV does not do him justice and how fast he really is. And even with all those injuries, to still be able to maintain that kind of speed, to me, is I'm dumbfounded by it. It's amazing.
No, listen, Sammy Watkins, you know, some people, I think, especially here in Buffalo, you remember him as the guy you traded up for. You could have had Odell Beckham and ended up with Watkins.
Right.
Watkins gave them a couple of really good years. But he never quite got to that level. I think everybody thinks he can. And so, look, when you look at Watkins, he is, as you mentioned, he is incredibly fast. If Tyreek Hill wasn't on the team, he'd easily be the fastest guy in the team. And
absolutely,
when you look at him, he is a big man. I've seen him live twice, and he is a big, strong guy. He is going to be somebody that they're going to utilize in the red zone. And I'll tell you, my opinion, I think the reason they got him more than anything else is because of that. Because in the years prior to this, it's been Travis Kelce and nobody in the red zone. And so I think the Chiefs said, you know, we need to get somebody who we can go throw the ball up to, and he can go make a play if Kelce's double covered. And so, look, Watkins is going to help this offense immensely, even if he doesn't have 1,000 yards. And he may not, because there's only so many footballs to go around. But he's a very talented player. And to your Sorensen point, they did that all last year in sub-packages. They would put him an inside linebacker, and teams just ran the ball at him day and night. If Bob Sutton does that again, there are going to be calls for his job by the second game of the preseason, and frankly, there should be, because Dan Sorensen has no business ever being near the box.
Well, hopefully it's just a training camp thing, and they need a body or something, and he just happened to play it a little bit. We're talking to Matt Verderam from FanSided here as we broadcast live from Chiefs training camp in St. Joe. I'm glad you mentioned Sammy Watkins in the red zone, because I hadn't thought a lot about it yet, because we're just starting into camp, and like I said, his speed stands out, and he can catch the football. But I'm glad you mentioned the red zone, because Tyreek Hill, when you get into a tight space, you're on the three-yard line, there's not a lot of room to move, he can get swallowed up, especially with bodies flying around. He can get swallowed up pretty easily, whereas Sammy Watkins is a guy that can stand out, and he can get some separation from a guy. Tyreek Hill's good on your 30- or 40-yard bombs, but in that tight red zone space, you're right. You're absolutely right. Sammy Watkins opens up something they didn't have last year.
Yeah. Think about, if you're a Chiefs fan, think about the last couple of years. Tyreek Hill, there are legions of examples where he has been loose on a 50-yard touchdown, a 60-yard touchdown, whether it's on special teams or in the passing game. Can't think of a lot of plays where he's caught a 4-yard touchdown pass. It's just hard. He's not that big of a guy. And so you're not going to throw a fade route to him. You're not going to throw a ball where it's a 50-50 ball up in the air. He's typically not taller than the corner that's guarding him. Watkins, you can do that with. You can throw a back shoulder fade to Sammy Watkins. You can throw a straight fade to him and just let him go up and outmuscle a DB. You can throw a slant to him, and it doesn't have to be low and away. It can be chest high or even head high, and he's going to come down with the ball more often than not. Sammy Watkins last year did not have one drop. And so he is an immense athlete. If he stays healthy, he's a huge, huge addition to that.
Absolutely. We're talking with Matt Verderam from FanSided as we broadcast live from Chiefs training camp in St. Joe. Kind of the couple of other things that stood out on the other side of the football, because we're all going to zero in on the defense if you're not focusing on Patrick Mahomes, because the defense has got to step up. We got to see Kendall Fuller working the last couple of days in that slot corner position. He has not been on the outside that I've seen, and we'd seen Steven Nelson on the outside, and look, he's been on the right side, so not the same as Marcus Peters, and that you're going to get unfairly compared to Marcus since he's not here anymore, but Steven Nelson's done an okay job the first couple of days, and Kendall Fuller, I'm very impressed by what he's been doing on the inside, not only just one-on-one guarding, but able to tip footballs as well.
Kendall Fuller is a phenomenal athlete, another guy, really. It is a big addition. I think he goes under the radar a little more nationally because he's been on the Redskins. Redskins haven't been all that great. But Kendall Fuller is a guy who, when you watch him on tape, has great lateral quickness. He can change direction quick. He can get in and out of his break, so to speak, but in that change of direction. And so when you have that in the slot, look, the slot is different than playing outside. It's a two-way go. You can, as a receiver, you can obviously break to the outside. You can go to the inside. On the boundary, you can use the sideline with you. So you need to have incredible awareness and nimble feet at slot, and I think Fuller gives you that. I think some people expect him to slide outside, but these days you're starting three corners anyway, and if he's best in the slot, which he is, then you keep him there. And you hope that Nelson, who played outside corner throughout his time at Oregon State and college, you would hope that he can assimilate there. Amerson gives you something on the other side, and you move forward. That's still a questionable group, but to me, Fuller is the best slot corner in the NFL.
Yeah, I've been very impressed with him the last couple of days. We're also seeing the quarterbacks roll through, and today we're fortunate today that being in full pads, we're seeing number one offense versus number one defense instead of one versus twos, which I don't think tells me enough, but ones versus ones tells me a little bit more. But when you go down the depth chart, Chad Henne is probably the favorite to win the two spot, but I saw him kind of throwing, and it's raining here today in St. Joe, so we might have some slippery footballs. But when I watch Chet Henne or Matt McGloin or even the Chase Litton, the rookie who was undrafted they brought in, I'm not really impressed with any of the three, and I'm kind of hoping none of them has to play more than a handful of snaps this season. But Chet Henne would probably be the leader in the clubhouse right now.
Oh, yeah. I think Henne would have to get hurt not to be the backup. If they brought him in to tutor Mahomes to help him along, and Henny's fine as a backup. He's not awful, stereotypical backup quarterback. He can come in if they have a game where he's got to play against the Cardinals or something like that. They can win the game. Now, if Henny's in there for a month, things might go south. But if they need him for one game to manage the offense, to score 23 points, and they can do that. Luckily, at least with Henny, he's got a lot of experience. I mean, he was a starter in multiple spots in the NFL. So, look, is he somebody you want to rely on for the season? No, if that happens, Chiefs are going to be sniffing the top 10 pick. But is he somebody that you say, okay, look, if he's got to play one game, two games, we can survive? Yeah, I think he gives you that, and that's all you can ask for.
And in terms of the running backs, the Chiefs are having a little bit of a shortage today because Kareem Hunt had tweaked a hamstring that he had injured back in during OTAs a few weeks ago. So he's done the stretching and some of the individual drills, but not full out on the team workouts. Spencer Ware is still coming back from his injury, and Sharkhandrick West suffered a head injury yesterday, and he's not even on the field. So we can maybe assume he's in the concussion protocol right now, but that gives a chance early in camp to, well, there's almost five guys with the last name Williams who are trying out a running back, but you at least get a chance to run with these ones where maybe you wouldn't before. And you have to get this on tape and get your grade from your coaches and prove that you belong, because there's a lot of running backs.
There are a lot of running backs. As you mentioned, it's like a family of Williams back
Yes.
there. But I really was impressed when I watched some tape this offseason. I believe Damian Williams, who is the running back out of LSU.
He's been running with the ones,
He can play. If you watch him on his tape at LSU, I was shocked that kid wasn't drafted. And I know he was on the fastest 40 of time, but he has great balance. He's a tough kid. He's got decent hands. When I watched Damian Williams, I was like, wow, that might be the guy who makes the team. He would not surprise me at all if he ends up on this football team. Look, if I'm Sharkhandrick West, I'm worried. It's an unfortunate injury that he has, but he could get cut. He could absolutely get cut. I think West is a good football player, but they have a lot of depth at that position. And the one thing that worries me, we talked about camp, what you can glean from it. You want to know the biggest thing in camp? Don't get hurt. Because
exactly
camp weeds out a lot of teams. Look at the Chargers. The Chargers have already lost two of the 10 best players in their team. And they did one practice.
They're in serious trouble.
They're in major trouble. And I am worried. If you're a Chiefs fan, you got to worry about Kareem Hunt and that hamstring. I know people say, it's just a tweak hamstring, it's a couple of days. Those injuries have a tendency to last forever. You can never get it right. You need to shut a guy down. If I were the Chiefs, I wouldn't play him at all. I don't care if he sits the whole preseason. They need to get that hamstring right, because you could just see it coming, where he plays 10 snaps against the Chargers week one, and he's hurt. And then you need to get something like that right. Those injuries have a tendency to linger.
Right, and there's also the possibility, we don't know how the rulings are going to come down yet, but Kareem Hunt was involved in a physical altercation in the offseason, and that's the second time that's happened. And the NFL has been coming down on this, so there's a possibility anyway that the NFL can say you're out for one game or two games or three games. So, again, that opens the door if that happens. We don't know anything about it yet.
I don't think he gets suspended, because I just don't think there was enough really to go off and say, okay, he's going to be out for a game. That being said, it's the NFL. I wouldn't be surprised if they suspended him for 3 years. So, you never know. You just never know what's coming. I don't think he's going to get suspended. I don't think there was quite enough. I don't think it was a big enough deal from what we understand. But, absolutely. If you are one of these kids in the running to make the team, there's not a whole lot of dots you have to connect before one of these guys is getting serious carries come week one. So the Chiefs luckily have depth there, but it's definitely a position to watch.
We're talking with Matt Verderam, who writes for FanSided, as we broadcast live from Chiefs training camp in St. Joe on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Matt, we had the NFL officials. They've been at practice the last couple of days, and they brought in one of their important officials yesterday to put on a video demonstration to the media of the new rules in the NFL this year and also answer questions, which I think is a great thing the NFL does during training camp. They'll rotate around from team to team, help the media. Hey, do you have any questions about the rules? Here's what we're changing. And one of the big points of emphasis is the lowering the head rule. And it's causing a problem. I was reading about it last night with the Chicago Bears, who were trying to sign one of their draft picks, but he had a tendency in college to lower his head on hits. And there's a story that says they want to work language into his contract where if he gets suspended for lowering his head, that they'll recoup some of his salary. This is going to be a learning process. It's probably going to be painful for certain players and teams to figure out how to play this way.
I look forward to the first time there's a 3rd and 10 and some team just runs a draw deep in its own end to try to just get field position. And somebody lowers their head incidentally and gets flagged for a 15-yarder and a first down. And that team takes the ball right down the field and scores the game-winning touchdown. That'll be fun. That'll be a fun Monday. I saw that video. I watched it as well. And I understand what the NFL's trying to do. And I'm all for safety. I think everybody is. The problem is that rule is going to be a nightmare to enforce. I don't care how many times they explain it to everybody, how many videos they show. Everybody's human. They have a different interpretation, at least slightly. You're going to see a slew of flags this year on plays that you just say, well, how is that avoidable? What are we doing? I mean, that's football. You have to sometimes put your head out there and make a play. And, yeah, it's not the safest thing in the world, but that's sport. I think at some point people do just have to accept, like, there's violence in the NFL. And no matter what anybody says, part of the allure of football is that it is violent. And
absolutely,
you want to protect guys, but you can't legislate hitting out of the game. I think they're going to have a very hard time with that. And the other point of emphasis in that video was they're going to be calling illegal contact like crazy this season, as if passers didn't have enough advantages. I actually think that benefits the heck out of the Chiefs, because you have two of the fastest players in football, receiver, who love to go deep. You got a quarterback who can throw the ball over a mountain. Teams are going to have a hard time if they don't get a big, good initial jam on Watkins and Hill. The Chiefs are going to be off to the races, or they're going to be getting all that first down. So I actually think the Chiefs are very well set up for a league that is increasingly going toward throwing the ball 35, 40 times a game, not because you have to, but because it's smart to do it.
Yeah, and I don't like that they're doing it simply because I grew up a big fan of, you know, Daron Sherry and Albert Lewis and Kevin Ross and Lloyd Burris. I like hard hitters. I like defensive backs who like to fight down the field, whether it's hand fighting or shoving. And boy, that just changes the dynamic. I don't know if guys like that or like a Rod Woodson could play by today's rules or today's standards.
I think it's going to be tough. I wonder how many times Eric Berry's going to get flagged. Eric Berry's not a dirty player, but Eric Berry crushes people. And a lot
of
times he comes in like a missile. Well, he's going to get thrown out of the game now if he does that. So my problem with the rule is there are plays where it's obviously avoidable and guys do it, and I have no problem if you want to fly that guy. But when it is a bang-bang play, when a ball's in the air 30, 40 yards down the field, and you're a safety, the only way you're going to get there is lunging and leaping toward that play. Well, inevitably, your head's going to lead. It has to. There's no way to avoid that. So what do you do if you're a safety there? You just pull up and let the guy catch it for a 40-yard touchdown, or you get thrown out of the game? Because that's what you're left with. I just don't understand how that's – I think the NFL, there should just be a targeting rule where, look, if you obviously can avoid it and you crush some guy helmet to chest, helmet to helmet, whatever, fine, throw him out of the game.
Yeah, I'm fine with
but
that.
But there are just going to be far too many times where a player is going to make a legitimate, honest football play, and it's going to be 15 yards in first down, or it's going to be some guy getting ejected. And I think it's going to cause a lot of issues.
We're talking with Matt Verderam, who writes for FanSided, as we broadcast live from Chiefs training camp in St. Joe. A couple of final things for you. One of the other new rules is they're adjusting the catch rule. And you've seen the video, and I think some of the catches that were ruled non-catches the last couple of seasons were absolutely ridiculous. And again, this is another thing that could seriously benefit the Chiefs with the kind of receivers they have. But it's good to finally clear this up, because the explanations that the referees have to give during a game that, well, he caught the ball and he made a football move and he turned, but he didn't control the ball all the way to the ground. All that stuff was, it got ridiculous after a while.
Yeah, look, I think they've taken a lot of positive steps in that regard. I still think the rule is so convoluted. I grew up watching football in the 90s. And if you caught the ball, if you had possession of football and you're 2 feet down, it didn't matter.
That's a catch.
If you got hammered and fumbled the ball, that's your problem. And I think that's what it should be. Now, maybe you say, well, it's just because you grew up with that. Well, I just think it's obvious. I mean, if you're playing football out in the street with your buddies as a kid, you know what a catch is.
Yes.
And I think the NFL
is – we all know what a catch is.
You know, I don't – now, I'm happy they've eliminated this going to the ground crap because that's exactly what it is. It's crap. But I do think, look, you still – you know, the rule is you got to have 2 feet on the ground or a body part, you know, whatever, your elbow, something like that. And you've got to control the ball. But then – you have to either make a football move or this, and this is the part where it gets tricky, or have the ability to make football move. Well, you just know at some point in the year that's coming up.
Right.
Because
it will.
It's going to be, well, he had a chance to make a move or he didn't have a chance to make a move. It should just be, you got 2 feet on the ground. If the ball's in your hands, and that's it. You caught the
ball. That's a catch.
Anything after that, it's a fumble, whatever. But to me, they've done better. They've gone in the right direction, but it's still too complicated.
Absolutely. But this is, I kind of joked about this the other day. This is what happens when you have a room full of executives and they've been sitting around discussing this rule for 9 hours, and then somebody says, well, what about if we have to control the ball to the ground? And everybody just nods in agreement because everybody wants to go home. And that's how this rule got out of control over the years, because everybody just agreed with something that was ridiculous.
Yeah, I just think, you know, sports are meant to be simplistic.
Yes.
You watch a baseball game, the ball or a strike. And, of course, the shades of gray, you know, a guy painted on the black, whatever. But you know what you're watching. It's a baseball game. The guy has caught the ball or hit. Football has gotten so out of control with these slow-mo replays. You got to go over it five times. Look, I'm sorry. They should ban slow-motion replays forever. If you're going to replay, you get to look at it in real time like the officials did. And if it's an obvious blown call, then you'll know it. And if it's not obvious, then it shouldn't be overturned. I think the NFL, and I love the NFL. I will watch every single game this year, the live run delay. But at some point, you've gotten so crazy that you're almost tangled in a web and you're forced to make calls that are pretty obvious, pretty non-obvious. And that's the problem. Everything in sports should be obvious.
And I could not agree with you more. And just to make a comparison to baseball in the super slow-mo, we had a play, it was the 2014 playoffs, 2015 playoffs, where Terrence Gore was picked off, and actually I think they called him safe on a pickoff call, or he was rounded third. Something happened at third base, and then they went and slowed it down to the hundredth of a millimeter. That's what he was out by, and I was like, are we really – Do we really expect the umpires to be this perfect? And are we really going to go back and double check it if it's that close? I mean, that was just dumb.
And no, it's not to get on a tangent, but it's like in baseball when a guy flies into second base and he's clearly there. He beats the throw, but the second baseman or the shortstop keeps the tag on him, and the guy goes off the base for like a quarter of a second because he's one leg's off, but the other one's about to come on, and they roll him out. Now,
right.
What world is that guy out?
Right.
I mean, I don't mind, you know, the neighborhood plays where the guy's basically out center field.
So right.
Make him touch the base. But football, I think the rules are going in the right direction in terms of catch rule, things like that. But it's still, you need a degree to figure out all this stuff. Just tell me if it's a catch. 2 feet on the ground, he's got the ball, great, it's a catch. Anything after that is whatever it is.
Well, Matt, I appreciate you joining us on this Sunday. Hopefully the folks you follow on Twitter put up some good video for you to study from here at training camp. I know lots of folks are doing that, and you're going to hear crowd reaction here in a second. Pat Mahomes just dropped. Rudy, would you estimate that at about 50 yards up on the bomb there?
Yeah, to Sammy Watkins, I believe.
Sammy Watkins. And we have an NFL referee crew here today who threw a flag. I don't know if they're calling offensive or defensive interference, but we'll get video review on that. We'll slow it down. But a big, huge pass play from Patrick Mahomes, 50-plus yards to Sammy Watkins. So good, good stuff. So hopefully you enjoy the videos as they get out on Twitter and the interwebs and all that kind of stuff. And have some fun. We look forward to some real football here in a week or two.
Absolutely. Looking forward to getting after it.
All right, Matt, thank you very much. We always appreciate your time.
Yeah, take care.
That is Matt Verderam, who writes for FanSided, watches a lot of video and is a guest of ours every once in a while. And, yeah, I kind of like that idea of no more super slow-mo. You don't get to overrule a play because you slowed it down to 1/100th of the speed. And you're going to hear another crowd reaction here because Chris Conley just caught a big pass from Patrick Mahomes, who is running. I'm talking about Mahomes was running directly at the sideline and threw back across his body to Chris Conley over the middle. So the crowd is getting excited here. There's only about, what, half an hour of practice left today, but the crowd is getting excited. The reins are out, and Patrick Mahomes is airing it out. We'll take a quick timeout. Jed Marshall is back at the Rally House Studios. My name is Brad Porter, live in St. Joe at Chiefs Training Camp, brought to you by Missouri Lottery, Mosaic Life Care, Metro PCS, Kansas Sampler, and Rally House. Back with more right after this. You're listening to Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Like a song, as you might hear. Trying to think of a town, maybe like in a New Orleans type town. It's not jazz, but if you were walking by a club you'd never been in before, and you heard that song playing from inside, you'd go in. You'd go in and watch it for a little bit.
Absolutely, this is Medeski, Martin, and Wood. I've seen them many times. They are, I don't know, they're considered jazz. They're great though.
Yeah. No, if I was walking by and they had open windows, because in New Orleans, every bar has open windows, and you can walk by and hear the music at every club you walk by. And if I heard this song as I walked by, I'd think, yeah, I want to go in there. I'm going to listen to some of that for a little bit.
It's called Little Walter Rides Again, Brad, so get it on your iPhone.
There you go. Little Walter Rides Again. Are there any lyrics?
Nope.
No,
they do pretty much all instrumental stuff. In fact, I don't think they have any lyrics in any of their songs, come to think of it.
It's all right. This is Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am broadcasting live from Chiefs Training Camp up in St. Joe. My name is Brad Porter. Our Chiefs coverage brought to you by Missouri Lottery, Mosaic Life Care, Metro PCS, Kansas Sampler, and Rally House. And Jed Marshall, the voice you just heard a second ago, is live in the Rally House studios back in town. Rudy Salazar is out here. He's making his way over to the post-practice interview area because the Chiefs are probably going to wrap things up here in about 15 or 20 minutes. We're back to doing a full 11-on-11. We saw the number ones versus number ones again, and now they'd cycle through the quarterbacks and back to Patrick Mahomes, and he's got Tyreek Hill in a slot. He's got Sammy Watkins next in. They got three. Conley on the outside, all three lined up together. I'm assuming we'll get some motion here. Travis Kelce by himself, and Mahomes is looking right at Damian Williams out of the backfield. Damian Williams has been running with the number ones as the running back today. Kareem Hunt is still not doing full turns at practice with that hamstring tweak. So,
Go ahead.
I was going to say, as we talked about with Matt Verderam, this opens the door for a guy that shows he can play with the number ones. Because you don't get to. If you're not a number one, or in the case of running backs, you can be a top two and run with the ones. But if you're a guy who's 2, 3, 4, 5 on the depth chart, Kareem Hunt's not practicing, Shaq Kendrick West got a head injury yesterday, he's not out here, this is your time, and you better take advantage of every play. Andy Reid said yesterday they ran 120 plays, and they're going to break down and grade all 90 players. This is your chance.
Yeah, it's their opportunity to do it and to shine. You think of all the guys that just are fighting for jobs. It's unbelievable. The Williams battle at running back is one that I'm really, really keeping my eye on. I do think it's pretty convenient that Kareem Hunt is injured, so therefore he can't talk to the media, what with his, let's say, interesting offseason.
Yeah.
But, running backs is certainly one of the places you need to keep an eye on, because I think, like Matt Verderam said, who's a great follow on Twitter, at Matt Verderam, Shaq Kendrick West, that injury, man, it's tough timing, but the running back is one of the positions where that's a position of strength, at least heading into this training camp, and we're seeing it kind of unfold in front of your eyes, not mine.
You're exactly right. I was just watching things unfold here. Patrick Mahomes was flush from the pocket, had to run through the middle, and you can't touch the quarterback. So who knows if he actually gained any ground, but there were flags all over. They have NFL officials out here, and there are flags all over the field. So, but five people jumped on the last play. One of the other things that Matt Verderam talked about with us is the new rules, including the lowering your head rule, which apparently they're going to call every time this year. My problem with it is, targeting, if you want to call targeting, fine. I get that. I'm totally fine with that. I don't like in college how they kick you out of the game and you get suspended for another half or whatever it is. I don't like that part of it, but I'm good with targeting. Let's not treat our helmets like the tip of a ballistic missile, okay? But lowering your head just happens naturally playing the game. Either you're bracing for impact or you're leaning to make a tackle or a play. It happens. I don't think this is going to go well. I don't think the players and coaches are going to take to this well at all.
I don't think so either. And I was always taught as a kid that, you know, you want to see what you're tackling. But
yes,
the natural instinct, regardless, is, yes, you want to see what you're tackling to a point when you're making impact. And then your head just naturally goes down. It's a natural human response. I don't know how you would try and prevent that. So to try and be able to dictate which is intentional and which is unintentional, you're opening a can of worms. I have a couple of different analogies. One is applicable to football because you started talking about the catch rule with Matt Verderam, and I don't know what a catch is on any level unless it's a wide open guy who just catches the ball and then starts running for, you know, 30 yards. I'm like, okay, that is a catch. I can confirm that. All of the other ones, I have no idea. I sit and say, that's totally a catch. Nope, no idea. So I think to try and dictate something as hard as whether a guy is intentionally lowering his head is going to be impossible.
Yeah, and much like the catch rule, you know, if you have to go to read three paragraphs in the rule book to tell you whether or not a player made a catch is ridiculous. And now you're going to be doing that with the leading with the helmet, and you're going to have to, again, I think they're taking judging intent out of it now. It's just going to be, he lowered his head, that's a flag. And I think Matt said it perfect. You're going to be in a situation where it'll be third and one, you'll have all the big guys, you'll have eight men in the box, and you'll have guys going head-to-head, and it'll look like the defense made a great play. And by the way, speaking of making a great play, is an interception by the Chiefs defense right now. I'm trying not to do play-by-play, but I want to let you know what the crowd is reacting to here. And that was, grab my roster here, that was Tonnell Passanio again. So
making plays.
Two interceptions in the last 2 days, and good to see. Nobody lowered their head on that play, by the way.
Fortunately.
No, it was all clean. But, yeah, just reacting to the plays and the crowd reaction as well. But, yeah, the lowering the head, if you're going to call it every time, to finish up that last story, they'll be lined up third and one, defense will make a stop, there'll be a flag for somebody lower their head, and the team will go down and score a touchdown. And then you're going to be looking back at that play saying, well, that was ridiculous.
Well, and at what level, what's your biggest complaint about baseball, Brad? The pace of play, or not yours specifically, but what are people's biggest complaints about baseball? That it's slow and that it's methodical. NFL football games, college football, it's even worse and perpetuated even more. But college football games, if they start having more and more flags, the game is going, whether we like it or not, to more and more passes, which means completions, yes, but again, incompletions and clock stoppage. With more flags, more reviews, things like that, getting NFL football games closer to 3.5, 3:45, 4 hours. I mean, it's my job, so I will sit and watch those games, but I will not be pleased about it, and I will take every opportunity I have to speak out about how long athletic events are getting. We have real lives to live, sort of, some of us, not me specifically, but others in this industry do.
Well, the college game is ridiculous. I mean, to go to a live college game, perhaps I'm jaded by the fact that I had to cover KU football for 3 years in a row or 4 years in a row, every single game. But they get to, they're not even 3.5 hours. They're going a full 4 hours now, maybe even to four plus. And there's ways they can speed up the college game. I know we're going in a different direction here. Speaking of rules, how about not stopping the clock on every first down? I mean, that would be one of the easiest rules you could change. And I don't know why they still stop the clock on every first down. Also, don't have 25-minute halftimes. your band can get out there and play in 10 minutes. It doesn't take that long. Of course, I don't have to organize a 150-piece college marching band, but the 20 to 25-minute halftimes, because look, they'll say it's 20, but by the time the players get off the field, by the time the band gets on the field, by the time the band gets off, by the time the players come back, it's 25 minutes. And it's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous.
No, I'm right there with you. I remember specifically one time last year where we actually had to cancel. You did 90 seconds of radio because the game went so long. But that's another topic for another day.
Sure.
Talking about what Matt also talked about, there was obviously the running back battle. And one of the things that I thought was interesting also was when he was talking about Kendall Fuller, and there was a lot of talk in the offseason about whether he would be moved to the outside. And you and Rudy had both mentioned that he's playing primarily on the slot. Matt's contention,
yeah, that's the only place I've seen him.
And Matt's contention, again, is that there's so much three cornerback play that it would be best served for him to continue to remain in the slot. What do you think about that, Brad?
Yeah, I mean, you keep a guy doing what he does best, right? We hear the comparisons, you know, when we watched the World Cup this summer, you would hear announcers say, well, he's playing the right side of the midfield, but with his club, he's a left-side defensive back. Countries and clubs play players in different positions, and sometimes it doesn't make sense. Kendall Fuller, his best work is playing the slot corner. That's where he's the best. And I thought Matt explained it brilliantly by saying that slot corner has to be quick on the draw to react to what the receiver's doing, because the receiver can go right, he can go left, and he can go a long way in either direction, whereas your outside receivers are going either straight at you or they're making a cut inside.
And thinking about it schematically, if you're able to shut down theoretically the slot receiver, that frees Eric Berry up more to play more of a center field or help on the over the top out patterns that are going to the outside receivers. So I think in theory that works well if you do keep Fuller at the slot corner.
Yeah, and as Matt mentioned, like Washington was bad last year, so fans in general probably didn't watch a lot of Washington football, and particularly their defense, and you wouldn't naturally zero in on Kendall Fuller. But when you break down the film, as Matt has done, some good stuff in there. He's really good. You look at the metrics and the ratings, and Pro Football Focus and those kind of things. He's really good. I'm kind of thinking the Chiefs got a steal here.
I agree. As you said, I didn't really watch many Washington games last year. But the tape that I have seen, and our good friend Seth Kaiser, who was on with us yesterday from The Athletic, at Real MN Chiefs Fan, Real MN Chiefs Fan, does great work breaking down just how good Kendall was in the slot. And as I say, when you have suspect corners, of course, losing Marcus Peters will be felt in a lot of different ways. But when you have David Amerson and Steve Nelson and guys like that on the outside who are you're a little unsure of, you certainly want to be able to shut down the slot. And I know everybody, again, I talked about Eric Berry already coming back, but he is a year older and coming off injuries, and he's been able to overcome so much. You hope that he's able to be the player that he has been.
Absolutely. You mentioned Marcus Peters, and I saw a tweet yesterday from one of the reporters covering Rams camp, and we're going to see the Rams here. Oh, I just lost my place on the schedule.
I thought it was preseason game three.
It's the Monday night game in November.
Never mind.
It's the Monday night game in November, November 19th. They showed picture or video of Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib walking in, and their coach was talking, you got some great guys here, and man alive, those guys, I like both of them. I like Aqib Talib because he's a KU guy, and he was counted out. He wasn't a five-star recruit or anything like that, and he became one of the best defensive backs in the country in college and has had a great NFL career. He's had some off-the-field issues, and Marcus Peters has some issues as well. I just wonder how that dynamic is going to play in the Rams' locker room.
That whole team is going to be very interesting to watch. They brought in a lot of big personalities, as you mentioned, with Aqib Talib and hopefully his mom is not coming along. Marcus Peters obviously being added. They signed in Ndamukong Suh. They have Aaron Donald, who has every right to be pissed and holding out.
Holding out.
I think that the Rams are a team that I would certainly, if I lived in Vegas or if Kansas would hurry up and legalize gambling, I would bet on the under on the Rams. I just think that there are too many moving parts, and for Jared Goff to have had such a solid year, I know that they have Todd Gurley, who's one of the best backs, if not the best back in the NFL. They do have a bunch of talent, but man, that's a lot. That reminds me of when the Eagles brought in Vic and all the different guys to make the dream team, and it completely fell flat.
Yeah, and Aaron Donald, for the folks that wonder about players sitting out from camp, this is why players hold out of camp. There was a player last year, I'm drawing a blank on the name, who wanted to hold out, wanted a contract extension. They wouldn't give it to him. Came in, got hurt, missed the rest of the year, and going into his free agent season, got virtually nothing. This is why players like Aaron Donald do this in the last year of the contract, because if he goes out, first play of the season, tears his ACL, breaks a leg or something like that, going into his free agent year, you're going to lose a ton of money. And that's why these guys do that. And I have no problem with it. On that note, we will take a quick timeout. We are live at Chiefs Training Camp in St. Joe, Missouri for Sports Sunday. Our Chiefs Training Camp coverage brought to you by Missouri Lottery, Mosaic Life Care, Metro PCS, Kansas Sampler, and Rally House. Jed Marshall is back at the Rally House Studios. My name is Brad Porter. Rudy Salazar is over at the post-practice media tent awaiting to talk to the coaches and the players. Back with more right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. My name is Brad Porter, broadcasting live from Chiefs Training Camp in St. Joe, where the rain has moved out, at least for now. So we had rain for about the first hour of practice, but it has been done raining for about 30 to 45 minutes now. Our coverage brought to you by Missouri Lottery, Mosaic Life Care, Metro PCS, Kansas Sampler, and Rally House. And the Rally House Studios is where Jed Marshall is, watching the Chiefs work in punt coverage and punt return units right now. And some of the guys going through standing in the punt return spot. So Byron Pringle, the rookie from K-State, who I really like. I would watch for him as a backup wide receiver, a guy who could squeeze in on special teams. I think he's got some pretty good skills. Tyreek Hill is back there, but he's not taking a lot of the returns. Demarcus Robinson, Gary Dieter is back there as well. So Gary Dieter's maybe, I don't know, Jed, does he have any intrigue for you? He was the guy that Patrick Mahomes got in sync with last year, and all of a sudden he became a guy.
He was on the practice squad last year, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He does have that going for him, so you'd assume that he knows the offense pretty well. I know that he was Mahomes' guy in the preseason last year. I'd keep an eye on him. We touched on Chris Conley last year. There's also Demarcus Robinson and the wide receiving core, it might be a tough nut to crack for Garrett Dieter to make the squad. He's always, you hear the names and they become camp darlings, the Bobby Scipios and the Casey Printers and
Speaking of trying to make the team, Jehu Chesson is another one of the receivers who's returning.
Yeah, Jehu Chesson's right there.
He just had a big drop on a punt return.
Ooh, that's my Michigan man. I need him on the squad. I can't have Chad Henne being my only Michigan guy I'm cheering for.
See, here's the thing. We talked about how 120 plays in practice, 90 players, they all get graded on everyone. When they're in the current drill that they're doing right now, it's not full out punt coverage and punt return. They're going through their blocking schemes, and then the punt returner can, you know, pretend like he's gonna take it to the house if he wants to. There's nobody coming down for him. The gunners aren't being turned loose. So you're not going to, you know, make or break by this. But if you're dropping the punts and that's your one job, that sticks out like a sore thumb.
Especially if no one's running at you. I think
Correct.
I could field a punt with no one running at me. In fact, I've done it before.
I got to, and Daniel Braverman, who's also trying to make this roster, is out there in the punt return lineup spot. He's a wide receiver from Western Michigan, a one-year guy in. I went to do a high school story. Was it last? No, it was 2 years ago, out at Blue Springs. And Kelly Donahoe is the head coach, and he's great. He played quarterback at KU, and he's one of the best high school coaches, not only in Kansas City but maybe in the country. And I went out to a practice one day, and I've known Kelly for a number of years, and so we were out there, and he goes, "Do you think you could return a punt?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. I haven't done it since I was a kid." And he goes, "Get lined up." And he punted the ball to me, and he made sure my cameraman at Metro Sports was shooting it because I think he wanted to see me drop it, and then we would throw it on TV. I caught it. I came down with it.
Pretty impressive. I'm proud of
that. That was
Brad.
On a high school practice field with nobody coming at me as well. No helmet, no shoulder pads, nothing.
I think you could get pads on me and I'd still be confident in my ability to catch a punt. I will not put a wheel spin on it, Cody, if you're listening.
I wouldn't do the wheel spin for anything. I've seen what's on that wheel.
It's getting tamer. But yeah, that's another story for another day. Brad, one of the things I wanted to address with you.
Okay.
I know that a lot of people have talked about the offensive firepower. We've done a lot on that today, and we also have talked a lot about the defensive side and what we've seen there. We maybe haven't touched enough on the pass rush and what we expect out of Justin Houston and Chris Jones and those guys. But one of the things I've had my eyes on, and it really piqued my interest when Tim Grunhard started talking about it, I think it was Friday on the Border Patrol, he mentioned the offensive line, and I know they were just doing quick work and they weren't in pads, so it's hard to really evaluate, but I just started thinking about the loss of Zach Fulton, the fact that Parker Anger and Mitch Morris have been injury prone and they're counting on such big things, and those guys being staples in the offensive line. What do you think?
Well, Mitch Morris was put back in the number one spot at center yesterday. He had not been with the ones the previous couple of days, but he got back into the one spot yesterday, and that moved Cam Irving over to left guard and move Parker Ehringer back to second string. And for Parker Ehringer, to me, it's a head scratcher, and I have to ask somebody about it. But last year he got injured. We all know that. But then when he got back and he was healthy, allegedly healthy, they told us he was healthy, he could not get on the field. Now, Cam Irving was a great pickup for the Chiefs last year. I like Cam Irving. I think he can play just about any position you ask him to.
Even wideout.
Yeah, maybe not. But, you know, if Morse is healthy, I feel better about that. If Cam Irving's left guard, I feel pretty good about that. The Parker Ehringer thing is, I don't know, you get into year two and you're either injury prone or you're not cracking the lineup, you're in a dangerous spot in terms of being with a team long-term. And I wonder what's at play here. Is Parker Ehringer just not as good as what they thought? Is he still not 100% healthy? What's the problem? But I like that group in general, the number ones in general.
I like them to a certain extent. I think that the loss of Fulton will be bigger because, like we said, Parker Ehringer, it'll be interesting to see whether he can get on the field. My fear is that he won't be able to be on the field in the capacity that the Chiefs, I think, drafted him in mind with. You know, they had more the road grading, big grinding guy that they'd really be able to rely on and maybe run behind. And I just think that his propensity to not stay healthy, I know, as you mentioned, Cam Irving, a solid player, a nice pickup. His versatility is being shown, bouncing around kind of that middle core there of the offensive line. But I guess if there is one thing that could cause Pat Mahomes and the offense to sputter, I think it is an offensive line that might not be as good and maybe not getting as much attention, I think, as people should maybe be focusing on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that, yeah, it's one of the things that when you go to camp, you look at the quarterback first, then you look at the wide receivers, the tight ends, the running backs, then the defensive backs, then the linebackers, then you get down to the line. So it's kind of, yeah, we should probably have a little more focus on that, because if there's any hiccups along that offensive line, you could find yourselves in serious trouble, and you don't need to have a problem with a quarterback that's going into his first year as a starter. All right, on that note, we will take a quick timeout, and then we've got hour number three coming up next. Dave Borchardt, host of The Final Whistle, is going to join us. Sporting had another loss last night. It's tough times over at Children's Mercy Park right now, so Dave Borchardt will join us. Jed Marshall's back at the Rally House Studios. My name is Brad Porter, broadcasting live from Chiefs Training Camp in St. Joe, brought to you by Missouri Lottery, Mosaic Life Care, Metro PCS, Kansas Sampler, and Rally House. Back with more right after this.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.